from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Okay. It's the Real World of Money. Good morning, February 7, 2018. This is Patrick Timpone. And you've got OneRadioNetwork.com. Tad bit of little coughing going on, but not too much because I am so over this thing. Boy, I tell you what, this is a booger. Anyway, we have the Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. He's a currency historian. And he's a nationally recognized one at that. He has a couple of books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the books, and working on a third book. And he buys and sells gold coins for a living out of Hilton Head and also Hawthorne, New Jersey. And he doesn't have a lot of stuff in the stock market, so you weren't jumping off of ledges or anything Monday or Tuesday, were you?
No.
All good.
I figured it might be my duty to go and catch a few people that were.
That's right. Hello, don't jump. It's only 1,200 points. But you know, when you're 25,000 on the Dow, 1,200
right,
is nothing.
Right, it's percentage terms. It's nothing. Yeah, I tell people to get some perspective. The stock market is like money. You know, the more zeros you add, right? The more dilution occurs.
A little perspective, because, I mean, if you look at what 1987... It was about, 700 points, and the world came, to a crashing halt. Everybody thought everybody was going to die, right?
Yeah. Well, that was actually almost triple what this was. That 700-point drop.
Oh, you mean as far as percentage?
That's what matters.
That's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
So we were at, so if you had 1,200 points, what is it, divided by 25,000? What is that?
Were we at 1,200 then? My goodness.
Yeah. I think Monday, 1,100 and some change. Yeah.
So, oh, no. I thought, yeah. So it's about 5%, 4.5, 4.2.
Yeah, 4.4, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And so like in 87, it was 20%, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a major haircut. That's what that was.
Major haircut.
Yeah. Yep. And it took years to get even. You can only be wrong one day. I can't stand that kind of volatility. I can't stand it. Yeah. I can't. I'm not good for the blood pressure, not good for your heart, not good for your mental state. Just do what you think is best, folks. But I'm hearing people with 80% of their money in the stock market, and I have to wonder how they'll feel if something bad happens. And here's the bad part. Nothing bad has happened yet.
Well, I mean, so I see different stories, and I want to get your take. Some people,
okay,
like the guy out this morning, who's the dude at the Fed? What his name is? Dudley.
The new guy?
No.
Dudley of New York.
Let's see. Yeah, Dudley says this was not the big drop. So he's out there saying, hang on,
yeah,
Sloopy.
This isn't it.
This is more to come. Yeah. What do you think?
Buckle in, hold on to your seatbelt, or what is the analogy there? Strap yourself in. Yes, no, this is be a wild ride. So we start with this little bit of volatility.
Oh, this is just like a little volatility.
It's like what do you get before the earthquake? What do they call those?
Tremors.
Tremors.
Yeah,
that's the word.
Yeah, people that are on this VIX made some money, man.
Then the IVIX evaporated.
Okay, so the VIX. Is the volatility.
And then people are learning the difference, I'm sorry, between the exchange-traded fund and an exchange-traded note.
Well,
and that,
you'll have to tell us about that.
Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, no, because it's gone now. It's over.
Oh, it's done.
We have this wonderful product that we can sell you that will protect you against this sort of thing.
Oh.
Except in this event.
So this is the IVIX?
I believe that was
something like that. Yeah. Now, the people that made a lot of money were the folks that knew the volatility was coming, the charties. And then they had actually then bet on the VIX, and if that goes up, then they make a lot of money. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be square, I expected this tremor in December, in January. To me, it seems rather obvious the reasons for it. But the earnings sort of put everybody off. I don't know if you notice all this, but Amazon reported its earnings the day after the show last week. So on Thursday.
Thursday, right.
Amazon reported their earnings, and by all measure, blowout earnings everywhere.
Right.
Higher than the analyst expected, et cetera. And then that caused everybody for some reason to step back and say, wait, maybe now's the time to take money off the table. So the behavior led by these, what do they call them, FANG stocks.
FANG, which is
Facebook,
Amazon.
Apple, Amazon.
What's the N?
Netflix.
Oh, Netflix and GE.
And Google.
Okay, FANGs. Yeah. Okay, they're FANG stocks.
FANG stocks.
And they're part of the Dow. Is that right, Andy? They're,
I think NASDAQ maybe. I'm not a stock person, right? I guess I'm the wrong guy probably to dissect the stock market because it's, to me, it's just another market. And I look like Warren Buffett at the fundamentals. And I guess, you know what, at 11 times earnings, Apple's probably a good buy. I don't know. You know what I do know? Numismatic coins. That's my thing. And all through that crash or whatever it was, a tremor, I could sit and think about the gold coins in my vault. And regardless of which counterparty risk there was, I wasn't going to be part of it. So,
you know, it's real strange. You know this Charles Nenner, right?
Yes.
So I get a call from his guy Monday morning, saying, Charles would like to do a show because there's something big that's going to happen and blah, blah, blah. So I said, okay, well, let's do it Tuesday after the show. And we had him on about 20, 30 minutes. He's kind of a strange German fellow, and you really can't, you don't really know what he's talking about. But he's, the only thing I really, it's just kind of too Fibonacci for me. But what I did get was that his people that ran on this VIX made a whole lot of money on Monday. But I don't understand. See, if the stock market is run on greed and fear, that the guy like this could even know this thing was coming, but he did. How is it even possible, though? I don't know how is that possible. Can you explain that to me?
Well, the chart guys.
Right, he's a chart guy, right?
He's a chartist.
He's a Fibonacci or whatever.
Yeah, so they look for things like, crossing lines. There's a DMAC, which is divergence. The DMAC. Oh, goodness. It's simply two lines that cross on a chart.
Yeah.
And the moving average versus the divergence in volume. And they look at that and see, oh, those two lines have crossed. So that means there's volatility ahead. Mm-hmm. So then they can buy something like the VIX.
The VIX or something like that.
Which is the volatility index. And when the market is relatively flat, see, if you would have bought the VIX, say, in November and held it out until March, you can buy an option on it. And you only get paid on volatility. It's like snake eyes.
The more volatile. Like he said, they bought it at 5 and then they sold at 40.
5?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know.
So, 5 is about 7 would have been okay. That's pretty close to the bottom, but 5. I mean, I bet Nenner absolutely caught the bottom of the VIX.
And every now and then they do,
Well, yeah, he did that time.
You do it,
but understand the kind of bet that it is. So, the kind of bet that it is you put up $10,000, and if it's volatile, you might earn $100,000, but if it isn't, there goes your 10.
Yeah, there goes your 10.
So it's not like you actually bought something and you hold something. You're literally betting on the next spin of the wheel.
Yeah, so you're in Vegas and you're having a martini.
Yeah.
And some dudes throwing something.
You're literally
something.
Betting on the next spin.
Sure,
of the wheel.
Of course, yeah.
So to me, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I would rather buy something of value and then just put it away and keep adding to my stack because I'm saving money. That's what I'm doing. And I'm sure everyone out there listening will agree. There are very few people out there that didn't earn money. That's, that's how they got their money. They earned it. They didn't gamble it. They didn't win it in Vegas or, the occasional lottery winner notwithstanding. We build our wealth a brick at a time. We don't expect to show up in the morning and find the wall already done.
But you know how boring that is. See, it's just like watching
it is boring.
The grass grow, you know.
Yeah, watching paint dry. Well, yeah.
You know, it's just really boring.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have clients that put away coins, you know, say 10 years ago when a lot of people bought because that was 2008, right? That was the panic. Everyone was worried that the whole thing was going to come apart.
Oh, then people were
the
buying
fact that
big
we
time.
Even had. Yeah, the fact that we even have to worry about that, Patrick, well, that just doesn't make me comfortable in terms of safekeeping for my life savings or my legacy for my children or my grandchildren. So I'm amazed, absolutely, at the amount of faith people put there. And for me, so I...
Well, I mean, you have folks that are taking... taking out home equity loans to buy Bitcoin. I mean, it's nuts.
Ooh, that was dangerous.
It's the Wild West out there.
Yeah, and so those folks that bought 10 years ago when gold was $1,900 and silver was $45, the ones that bought the semi-numismatic coins, they probably have lost money. And folks that bought bullion most certainly lost money. But the numismatic coins, they're holding their own. They seem to maintain themselves. A rare coin just stays rare. It doesn't suddenly become common. And, you know, the buyers are actually finding this market because if you look at just the semi-numismatic coins, which are, say, two-thirds of their value when gold was 1900 and silver was 45 bucks, while the stock market is, of course, even with this little tremor, still at all-time highs, and the bond market, we really need to talk about that.
Well, there's some real strange things going on.
Oh, that's Charles, where the
so you know that Charles says he's thinking gold is going to make some moves this year.
Big moves.
That's what he says. He thought in a few months it's going to start. And he was also talking about the dollar that he was out at. I think 103 or something like that. He almost caught the top of that.
104
right?
was the top.
He was out at 103. He said. Yeah. And he said the dollar is gonna come back again too this year. How is that?
I doubt that.
You don't think that's gonna happen?
I doubt that. Yeah, I can't see that happening.
So the dollar is what this morning? What 89?
89.
Almost no. I'm sorry. Almost 90. Right. 89.88.
There's your comeback. There's your comeback. Enjoy it. It's the dollar. Look, ARC tax revenues are running $15 billion behind last year. Now, it's going to take time for this tax cut to really stoke the economy. But at a time when we were already foregone accepting the fact that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates. So in a rising interest rate environment, we're adding what is effectively economic stimulus. And, now we have a government expected to run a trillion.
$1.3 or something.
Again this year.
Yeah. Man, what kind of guy is Stockman? David Stockman.
You know, he's the former budget director, David.
From Reagan,
He's the guy that sold us the trickle-down economics, if you recall.
Did he, though?
Yeah, if we give money to the rich, then they're going to trickle it down to the poor.
Okay, well.
He was close to what Trump did.
Let's play a little bit of Stockman and see what you think about what he's got to say. Here, listen to everything.
Then yesterday, the Treasury said we're going to have to borrow, get this, $617 billion in the next 5 months, which means they'll need a $21 trillion debt ceiling by June 30th, which I don't know where the votes are coming from, frankly.
So and are we then, headed for towards disaster?
We're heading towards disaster because when we get to October 1, that's fiscal 2019. Remember, this is year 10 of an business expansion that at that point will be the longest in history. They're ballooning the debt to $1.2 trillion. In other words, the tax cut is going to whack their revenue by $280 billion.
Right.
They inherited $700 billion. They're adding $100 billion to appropriations, defense and non-defense. Mm-hmm. They have this huge disaster thing to fund. Mm-hmm. Trump promised he's going to bail out the Obamacare insurance subsidies. When you put that all together, now here's the point. For the first time in history, the Fed is pivoting to QT, quantitative tightening, shrinking the balance sheet.
So that's the new aspect to all of this.
It's the new. It's totally different because they're going to be selling $600 billion worth of bonds in fiscal 2019.
Okay, so Dave said they're going to be selling 600
Okay, here's that logic. Okay, so I'm paying off credit card A. I'm paying it off completely.
All right.
Where am I getting the money? From credit card B. Yeah, the Fed might sell that many, but they're certainly going to replace them with something else. There is no way they can withdraw that much money from circulation at a time when we're going to run... He did say $1 trillion debt. It's actually
deficit.
Deficit that's added to the debt.
Right.
So the $21 trillion debt ceiling won't cut it. That won't even break us even. We need 22 to break even, and that only leaves us about $320 billion in spending room before we hit it again.
Right. Pretty soon you start talking about some real money. Let's finish.
At the same time, the Treasury is borrowing $1.2 trillion. But more importantly, even if they find some way to paper it over, my point is about economics. My point is that you're going to have bond market carnage like you've never seen before. But this in the business cycle, no one has ever tried to borrow $1.2 trillion. 5% of GDP when the Fed is selling bonds. So the point I was making is $1.8 trillion worth of Treasury bonds are going to have to be absorbed by someone because for the first time the Fed and the Treasury are both selling.
Okay.
Huge.
At the same time.
So is he wacko or is he onto something?
No, he's not wacko. A blind man could see this. Well, a blind man
a
who
blind
paid
man
attention
could see
in
this
economics
coming.
Class.
Uh-huh.
If you paid attention in economics class, you know exactly.
Okay,
what
so what's going to happen here? Are we going to have a disaster like the Bloomberg girl was saying? Are we going to have a disaster? I mean,
well, will it? I don't believe Jerome Powell will allow it to happen. Somebody told him, and they told the press, and this was all Janet Yellen, that the Fed was going to unwind their balance sheet. What did I say when they said that?
They're not going to do that.
There's no way they're going to do that. Not only are they not going to do it, but they may very well reverse course and resume QE. So don't think the Fed is beyond that. That's exactly their remedy. So to suggest that they're going to let the wheels come off the bus. Well, you know what? Maybe just to get Trump out of office, they'll do just that. They're willing to burn the whole city down in order to remove him from office. Okay.
You know, we had talked about the idea that Mr. Trump, President Trump, was on the wrong side of the idea of pinning his fortunes to the stock market because we knew what was going to happen, right? So now he's out today and he said, in the old days, when good news was reported, the stock market would go up. He said, today, good news is reported, the stock market goes down. Big mistake. And we have so much great news in the economy. So now he's out there saying, it's a big mistake. Just don't worry about it. Yeah. It's God love him, you know.
Well, he is correct in this sense. The earnings for the companies are, in fact, very good.
They're very good, aren't they?
They're reporting very good earnings. So the value of the stock is based upon those fundamentals. If we were having poor earnings, that would really be a horror show. But the fact that there are good earnings underpinning the stock price and the world is awash with money means that there's really no shortage of takers for equities because, hey, we're not buying bonds, that's for sure. Who would buy bonds in a rising interest rate environment?
Yeah, nobody.
You'd have to be
bonds.
Out of your mind. In fact, the trade is, well, let's short them because we know rates are going up. People are going to be selling them cheaper. So to say that it is the world turned upside down, I guess, if you haven't been paying attention.
Wacky.
And it's because of all of these, forgive me, Charles, the chart guys. So they develop charts that computers follow and companies follow. You know, Goldman Sachs has this famous high-frequency trading platform, and you have other platforms that look, and they all see the line cross at the same time, and they all hit the button at the same time. And when they do that, it doesn't work anymore. You see? It only works when only one guy hits the button and then he cleans up and everybody else pays. But when everybody's looking for that insurance, if you look up that inverse VIX, I got to get the rest of that story. It was an exchange-traded note. Huh. And it was down from 102 or 3 to 10 virtually overnight. And it essentially provides protection against this sort of volatility, and it didn't work. So they're closing it. It's going right out of business.
I saw that. They're just not going to do it.
So that's like in the money market fund, in the last crisis, they broke the buck. Do you remember that? Where people had this thought in their mind that if they have a dollar in the money market and they withdraw a dollar, it acted like shares, but it was a dollar per share. And so your share volume went up or balance went up or your share balance went down. But you could always trade your shares at par, which is $1. And I think it was the reserve. So many people were saying, I want to cash my money market, that they broke the buck. They started paying less than a dollar a share.
Yeah, like 96 or something.
Yeah, it was small, but it was still the kind of haircut that people don't expect. They are not expecting to say, oh, wait a minute, my account just lost 3%. That's like direct capitation. So whether you think you're participating or not, you are. If your money's in MZM, or it's in the money markets, or it's in cash under your mattress, doesn't matter. You will be diluted like everybody else. So when that increase in the money supply comes, and it is inevitable now, it's inevitable.
With numbers like that, what do you say they're going to borrow 687 or something in the next 6 months?
Remember the point that I made when Donald Trump was elected. That he came in with his hand behind his back. Why? Because, remember this number? 60% of the national debt was due and payable in the first 5 years.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do.
60%. So it was roughly $20 trillion. We were talking $12 trillion has to be refunded in that first 5 year period. So here we are, end of year one. It's not going to get easier from here. Every year for the next 4 years, the Treasury's borrowing needs are going to explode every year. So you know what? I'll predict this, that next year we'll look back and fondly on trillion-dollar deficits. We'll be like, remember when the deficit was only a trillion, like we do now with $100 billion?
So where's all this money going? Is it just like Stockman was saying with the more defense, infrastructure, the disaster relief programs, Obamacare, everything.
Right.
That President Trump wants to do. This is just all costing more money than what.
It's all costing borrowed money
until the implications
of the tax cut reflect themselves. But here's the other problem with that. Okay, So the number one tax revenue collector for the federal government is the individual income tax.
Yay, that's people. Yay.
It's because. They're withholding from you, or you're paying in your quarterly, your federal withholding tax, your 7.5% contribution to Social Security, and your employer's 7.5% contribution to Social Security. So that's already 15% more than corporations pay on the same money, and then all put together. So the trust fund portion, that 15%, they treat it like a piggy bank that they can reach into anytime they want.
And they do.
So by increasing the payroll tax, by increasing the number of jobs, by increasing the number of individuals working, right? Unemployment is at a low.
Yeah.
And going lower. Wages are rising. More revenue for the Treasury, but 15% in trust will be spent just like every other dollar, driving us deeper into debt on the Social Security trust fund side.
Because that is definitely going right into general revenue and being spent.
Yes, it is.
There's no doubt about
proven
that.
Proven that, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years
and
ago.
So there's no real long-term fix for what they're doing. Right?
They're honestly thinking shutdown to shutdown now.
Oh, good.
Really, literally.
But I mean, as far as Social Security, Andy, I mean, there's no long-term plan of how to fix this thing.
It's a Ponzi scheme. Yeah, it's Ponzi. So you're paying the old investors with money that you're gathering from new investors. And to the extent that you can't get new investors, then the guarantor, which is the rest of us, have to step in and make the payments. And we, the guarantors, have already absconded with, you know, $3 trillion of Social Security funds that if we don't put back, the whole thing collapses. So we're running out of time. We already have it upside down where more people are taking out.
Taking out this bit, putting in on a monthly basis. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So the idea from Mr. Trump's side was, let's increase the number of people putting in. Let's increase the amount of payroll going in there. Let's get some of these jobs back so you'll increase the payroll tax numbers and try to stave off the inevitable we need to pay back Social Security. They're trying to avoid it like the plague. Because that dips into the general revenue. You know, when you took that money 10 or 15 years ago and built the bridge or, you know, whatever you did, gave out free phones, whatever you did with the money, it's gone now and it's spent. And so now it has to be paid back. Because if it isn't, they cannot sustain the Social Security Trust Fund. They can't sustain it past this year. So it's not good, folks. To say that the debt situation has gotten so much worse. Rick Santelli did a piece last week. My partner Fred told me about it. It was, he said, see if I remember these figures, that in 2006, the total amount of treasury bonds of sovereign debt, not just treasury, our treasuries, but the entire world's sovereign debt, central banks held about $4 trillion. Dollars in 2006
of sovereign debt,
meaning the debt of the government. Mm-hmm. Sovereign debt. So the central banks of the world had held $4 trillion. What do you think it is today?
I have no idea.
160
trillion. Oh, that's trillion. Not possible.
It is possible.
No, it's not possible.
It's 40 times what it was in 2006. And the central banks own 33% of all the treasury debt. 33%, a third of all the treasury debt.
So in other words, the central banks monetized, they created
government debt.
They created government debt on euros or whatever.
They monetized government debt, where historically that money came from the existing production and people put it away. So they're saving their money. Where are they going to save it? They buy a treasury bond. They hold the bond. They buy a treasury bill. They hold the bill.
And that would be sucking money out of circulation.
Out of circulation, right.
And it's not inflationary at all.
And that's the choice economists are given, guns or butter. So if you suck too much money out of circulation to borrow money to buy guns, you're not going to have any money to pay for butter, right? That's it.
I want butter too, though.
Well, you think North Korea here. So, you want butter too? Well, then here's what we'll do. We'll have the Federal Reserve buy the debt so it doesn't suck any money out of circulation.
Sure.
How's that plan?
We'll just create it.
And while we're at it, we'll choke down unemployment. Excuse me. We'll release unemployment. We'll make unemployment a fact of life by opening our borders and letting people come in and undercut the wage market. Then any of the skilled, high-paying jobs, we'll export those overseas through our tax policy. Man, you know, we'll control the inflation that way. This way, we can spend the money before anybody realizes that we've done it. And we wake up one day and we're $20 trillion in debt and everyone's retired. They're all retired.
It'll just go to show you what too much coffee, too much scotch, too much whatever
and
else
bad
they
attention.
Do. And bad attention and living in a bubble what these people are doing, you know, all these hedge funds. And
They're debauching.
Madness. It's just madness.
They're debauching our money with leverage and debt. And the amount of debt that's out there is so frightening. The thought that once again, we're up to, just like, you know what, this is going to sound familiar. It's going to sound like 2008 because there is three times as much debt, once again, as there is money to pay.
In the world.
In the world.
Three times as much debt. Wow.
Three times as much debt
and money
as there
even
is
exists.
Money. Yeah. Correct. Huh. So if, once again, and this should sound eerily familiar for anyone who's been listening to the show for a decade, you remember this. You know it. eerily familiar. The problem was that there was three times as much debt as there was money to pay. So what did they do? They monetized all that debt, pumped all that money into the system. Happy days are here again. Stock buyers borrowed money to buy stocks, borrowed money to buy bonds, borrowed money to buy everything. They used leverage based on the cheap interest rates, which the Fed had driven down. And here we are at the what they call the end of this business cycle. And what do we have once again? Three times as much debt as there is money to pay. So we only have two choices here, folks. It's simple. You either bust out and pay everyone 30 cents on the dollar. Here's your 30 cents. You have a dollar. Here's right. And that's depression. Depression. Deflationary depression. Then from that, asset prices plunge because who can buy anything? The only people who can buy anything are people with cash, money, cash. Yikes, they don't love, like, that's the 1929 redux. That's why Ben Bernanke was brought in to fix that problem. And you know who was brought in to fix it this time?
Who?
Jerome Powell.
Jerome Powell. It doesn't even seem even close to anything, quote, real, unquote, with this whole thing worldwide, the monetary system. It's just the biggest bunch of silliness I've ever.
Notes.
Debts and then just okay. A bunch of politicians.
I can sum that up this way, that
man.
Gold and silver standard means that you can only spend current money. And that's it. You can only spend what you produce and make today.
Yeah, all right.
A fiat-backed monetary system, one that's backed not by solid, tangible things, but backed by the issuing authorities' faith and credit. That's what we have with the Federal Reserve System. That allows for the mobilizing of credit to spend future earnings. That difference just, I mean, the discipline that's forced on the economy by a gold and silver standard means that we can't or don't extend ourselves beyond what we can do because of the ability to lose everything. And it's everyone. So it's institutionalized because of the gold standard. Once you remove the gold standard and say, oh, well, we're out of money, we'll make more. Remember the DeVito solution.
We'll make more.
No, boy, we'll just make more. Well, that's great, but it allows for the what Jefferson called it, the swindling of posterity. You know, your kids wake up, hey, what do you mean I'm $54,000 in debt?
What was the longest that a country or reserve currency ever worked on a gold standard, Andrew Goss? The longest.
Yeah. I mean, the longest would be...
the British pound thing?
No, the Byzant.
The Byzant? Who knows from a Byzant?
Byzantine. The Byzant, yes.
I don't know.
Byzant. That would have been about 500 years. It was the standard for, you know... since the beginning of money, the Byzant.
And was that Spain? Is that Spain?
Forgive me.
I don't know.
You know, I'm a specialist in American coins. I touch on monetary history to tell you that it's in the Middle East is about all I can give you. You know, and we're talking in the days of King Croesus and all that. You know, everything he touched turned to gold and all.
But even back in King Henry days and all that 1400s, 1500s.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was just. I mean, it was just gold and silver.
Here's
that's
a hunk
all,
of silver.
That's all
here's
they
a hunk
had,
of
right?
Gold.
There was no.
How
notes.
Do I know how much gold that is? Well, it's struck into a coin.
Yeah.
That,
so
Sir Isaac Newton.
So they were really on a gold standard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. But and the Spanish milled dollar, which was, you know, the Spanish silver dollar. So chests full of those would be transported across seas and deposited with creditors or debtors, you know, whatever the case may be. When you paid someone, the value transferred with the thing that you were paying them.
So they screwed that up simply by being greedy and...
by seeing the constraints.
But also then they would attack each country and steal their stuff.
Take their stuff.
That was the problem there.
That's what's
when you got real stuff, people will come and take it, right?
The taking of the stuff. Yeah. They'll come and fight you for it.
Or if you marry my daughter, well then I get half your stuff.
Then we'll get together and we'll take the other guy's stuff. Yeah, that's how empires were built. Yeah, obviously, people have been
governments always
trying to take over
that,
the
right?
world, but then once they realized the magic of money.
Ooh.
Then they realized they could take over the world without ever sending a boat or a chest of gold.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure it would have been great fun if King Henry would have had Bitcoin, you know?
Oh, my. Are we today? I'm holding my head.
Well, it's pretty ugly out there.
Okay, then don't talk about it.
It was, lampshades were up almost $20,000.
I remember.
In December, remember that?
I went without
people
lamps.
People were just going nuts.
Borrowing
and
money.
And now they're $8,000. And every
How
time,
many?
$8,000.
And they're looking at each other like, what did we buy here?
Yeah, what's the...
what is this?
Now here, I want to understand this. Okay, So say you had, I don't know why I don't understand this, but
before
say
you
had,
do, God, let yeah. me say they had a, there was a conference yesterday.
Yeah, in, yeah, well, I wanted to ask you about
Mexico.
That.
Mexico, yeah.
What was the big, the downside of all of that, or upside?
Not really. The upside was that the developers, the people that, you know, believe in blockchain and its technology, they're there. And in the days of John Maynard Keynes, when he said that gold is a barbarous relic and we should be using these... government-controlled, closely regulated units that are created without any reference to gold.
Yeah, we love John.
There were people that really worshipped him for this concept. And so now these same types of converts are pointing to Bitcoin as the future of money.
Sure, of course.
And much the way John Keynes pointed to the future of money being electronic. And you know, in his day, a dollar was worth, okay, let's call it a dollar. Today, that dollar is worth 6 cents, maybe 8 cents. And he hasn't been dead that long.
Yeah. So
I mean, we understand, right, that this moving from the gold standard was a 20th century thing. It's not.
Which was 1913, right?
Not really.
33. Yeah,
because until 33, technically, until 1971.
Yeah, you could.
We were on a de facto gold standard.
If you lived outside the United States, you could exchange, right?
So it's effectively in my lifetime, in your lifetime, that we've said, okay, we could take the training wheels off now. Gold always acted as, you know, sort of a rudder. And now we've taken the training wheels off and we're riding on our own. I'm afraid we're going to have skinned knees before.
So
this
when Tricky, I am not a crook, Nixon said we're going off the gold standard on your birthday, right? In what,
71.
71. Mm-hmm. How much debt did the United States have? Probably.
Oh, no. That's what, oh, goodness. Yeah.
Probably not much of anything, right?
No. It's a rounding error by today's number.
Yeah. And now it's 20 trillion or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just on the bond.
20
debt.
Trillion yeah,
just
on the books.
Yeah. Just a bonded. Okay, I want to go back and try to understand, like when people get involved in this Bitcoin thing. Okay, so back in December, Bitcoin. We're just going to call it 20,000. Okay, so you would buy. Somebody would put in $1 million, and they would get I don't know whatever, 112 Bitcoins or something. So when Bitcoins begin to go down. There wasn't really any money lost. Is that correct? So in other words, I'd like to understand how that works. So if you had a whole bunch of people, and let's just say you had 300 billion.
They were mining.
Yeah.
They were creating Bitcoin.
Yeah, no. Let's not go there. That's too complicated.
Oh, we can't? Okay.
And I just want to talk
about. We're
going to
assume that they're there.
Just buy. Yeah. But I mean.
People took their. Work money.
Work
their,
money, and they bought
their
Bitcoins, and it drove it up to $20,000 per Bitcoin. Okay.
Correct.
So then all of a sudden, things start happening, and Bitcoin, say, goes down to 15,000. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened to the money between the 20,000 and the 15,000?
The sellers got it.
The sellers got it. So... So people, so Bitcoin was going down. People would sell their Bitcoins because it was going down, and then they lost money. Correct?
Yeah, but they took money.
But some people took money.
You're assuming that the guy who bought it at 20 sold it at 15.
Yeah.
But it's more likely that the guy who bought it at 10 saw it go to 20 and then sold when it hit 15. That's more likely.
And then the money that the person came up with went to the guy who... Who sold.
Yeah, the guy who bought it 20.
Who got it.
To the guy who sold at 15, so the sellers got it. And it, you remember there's, if you're going to not look at the issuing power, the issuing authority, and just assume that the Bitcoins are there already, then that would be a closed system, right? So everyone who, you're not, there are no new ones. Everyone who comes in with a different currency, be it dollars or euro or yen, whatever it is,
yeah,
they exchange that quantity for the lampshade and go about their business.
So right now, Bitcoin is $8,000. Did a bunch of people lose $12,000 worth of?
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere along the line?
Yeah, there were losers and there were winners.
And there were winners. But it was all being exchanged between people gambling on this thing.
That's right.
Right, yeah. like peer-to-peer.
Yep.
I want to buy this.
Yeah, no central authority. You know,
so like money just changed hands between individuals. It had nothing to do with the dollar whatsoever.
None at all. It's within a zero-sum game. I mean, it's not like banks are going to let you pledge your Bitcoin for a loan. So, you know, leverage, maybe people are borrowing money on other assets and putting that into the Bitcoin market.
So if I would go out and say, spend $10 million today and buy $10 million worth of Bitcoins at $8,000 a Bitcoin.
You'd have to have that $10 million.
You'd have to have the $10 million, and that goes to people that sell, right?
Whoever's selling,
like whatever, say if it's 500 Bitcoins or something like that. Okay. So then I sit there. Thank
you. Somebody just handed me the chart. Sorry. Okay. The total debt in 1971 was $370 million.
No.
$370 billion.
You're kidding me.
$370 billion with a B.
$370 billion worth of debt in 1971 when they closed the gold window.
Closed the gold window.
Whoa! And now it's 21 trillion. Whoa!
With a TR.
Well, see, that'll show you what happens when you go off the gold standard.
Yeah, it's 63 times what it was in 1970.
And where'd all that money go? Who's got all that money?
Well, here's the thing. See, that's not a zero-sum game.
Right.
That's not a zero-sum game. The Federal Reserve continually adds to the supply of money.
Right.
Continually.
Because loans, so homes and mortgages or whatever.
Everything.
Yeah. Credit cards, yeah. Stuff.
Everything.
Yeah, stuff.
And whatever it monetizes, whatever it puts into circulation, and what the commercial banks multiply using the money multiplier. So we studied that. Modern money mechanics, folks. The Chicago Fed. Get the publication if you don't quite have a handle on how the Fed creates money. But there is no equivalent authority in the crypto market. So that's what the advocates like about it, that there is no...
It's a closed system.
It's a closed system.
It's just kind of like boom, 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 back and forth.
And the supply is regulated. If there's a panic in that market, there is no one, save for the J.P. Morgan of the crypto world, that will come and say, okay, we'll ease the burden, we'll ease the debt, we'll ease the quantity of Bitcoins, or we'll tighten the quantity of Bitcoins, depending on market demand.
Right. There's nobody out there doing that.
Nobody doing it except, as I said, the way that they used to do it before the Fed, the J.P. Morgans of the world. So the biggest player in that market might decide to support it in the event of a collapse. But I think we're seeing evidence of that.
Well, that's what the cryptomaniacs like, though, because they don't want the boys and the banks involved, right?
I know.
They think it's cool.
They see it as a plus. I see it as a minus.
They see it as.
You cannot have a system without backing, without the discipline of gold, unless it's regulated. Even Keynes said that.
Unless it's regulated.
The regulation has to be both a physical market presence that buys and sells, that's the central bank, and a spillway, a taxing authority that pulls money out of circulation. And so those are the two methods of regulation in Keynes's thesis of how a money system could work without being gold or silver. And these components are missing from the crypto environment, and they see it as a good thing, but they don't understand, perhaps, right? Maybe they do, and they're just letting the market decide. So in the psychology of crowds and the madness of crowds, as McKay wrote, you can predict it. They'll run like lemmings. And so everybody's selling, Everyone's selling. It keeps going down. Nobody's stepping up. It goes down way farther than it should. And then everyone's buying and no one's selling, and it goes way higher than it should. Hmm. And these wide booms and busts are what shakes the wheels off the wagon. You need a nice steady ascent or descent that intergenerationally is almost imperceptible. So you have to wait for, you know, 50 years before you can look back and say, oh, gee, you remember when Pop used to cost a nickel? Remember when I could ride the subway for a quarter? So,
but yeah. If you look back to 71, how have Americans fared with their, say, their wealth or their...
Individual?
Their debt ratio, okay, and all of that stuff over the last, 50 years?
So it's the quantity of money that people are focused on, how many dollars. And so they can point to 1971 and say, oh, the weekly wage was only 125 then.
Sure, I remember.
And now it's 600 or whatever the number is. Yeah, what is the average weekly wage?
I don't know. I'll ask Mr. Google.
Mr. Google might, whatever it is, if you look at it in a vacuum, you'd say, wow, look at the productivity gains. Went from 125 a week for the average worker to, I don't know, 600, 900 a week.
863 is the average.
900. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah, wow.
Wow.
Like nine times of what it was.
Yeah. Well, eight
71,
times.
71, right?
Eight. Yeah. So call it eight times and say, all right. You're getting paid with money that's worth, so how in total money supply, how much money was in circulation then versus how much now? And you'll see that number is more like 20 times as much money in circulation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, probably 25 times, right?
Probably.
I mean, in 71, there was probably only...
Except we don't know what money is. At least in 71, we knew what it was. We knew how to count it. Now, what do you call money? You know, people that own... Yeah, what's money?
Lampshades?
We can't decide what money is.
I think a lampshade.
So for me, that's a time to go back to basics. When everyone is on the edge of their seat, so to speak, I don't want to be a participant, because even the person who doesn't think they're taking any risk and puts all their money in a bond fund or in a index fund or in a money market fund, I don't want to gamble. I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to park it here.
Got to be safe, right?
Yeah, just to be safe. And then they realize they're not safe. Imagine they sold these investors on this investment strategy, and then they said, you can buy insurance by buying this exchange-traded note that will, you know, pay you if everything else falls apart. It'll break you even. Now they found out everything fell apart and the exchange-traded note fell apart. It's like nothing worked the way it was supposed to.
Are you suggesting that the only way to really... protect your wealth. No, I know.
Don't go there. Why?
Are you saying that though? I mean, really?
I mean, everyone would be better off have just physical assets,
no matter.
Physical assets.
I mean, no matter where you are in this whole game.
No matter where you are, store your wealth in physical assets.
You think ten years from now you'll look like the Dalai Lama of Nostradamus saying that?
Well. I think it's basic. That's the going back to fundamentals. You know, we talked about how people have done that with food and medicine.
Right.
Right, where things are so confused in the medical world. It's like, try this chemical, this chemical, this chemical, this chemical, this might
after
work.
After a while,
oh,
yeah,
gee,
you
that
just
made
say,
your
just
arms
eat organic food,
sorry.
Man,
ooh,
and just
that made your hair fall out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, oops, sorry, that made your toes fall off. Sorry. With all the different financial products that investors are being offered.
Crazy. What's going
and they cannot really discern the difference, and so they just throw their money in. And, oh, it's in my 401k. Well, what's your 401k invested in? I don't know. I bought a retail sector fund. Let's look at it. What's included in the retail sector fund? You would expect all the big retailers. Instead, you find all the oddball retailers. So you cannot count on things that work for everyone. Because nothing in that financial market, from exchange-traded funds to mortgage-backed securities to collateralized debt obligations, you name it, all of them are fictitious in nature, and they're only based on the substance that people are willing to apply to it at any given time.
But is it even reasonable to think that folks with retirement funds in any different forms listening today, February 7th, could do it put everything into to real, like gold and silver, either coin.
$20 gold pieces?
Or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, is
could you make an annuity with $20 gold pieces? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you think overall, you know, you're going to be better off 10 years from now.
I do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole time you're
how would you
holding,
not, knowing what we know about the way this whole silliness
how would you
works,
not? Okay.
How would you not? I mean,
10 years from now.
I mean, the only way you would not is if these people got real.
Get disciplined.
Got disciplined,
yeah,
and
got
said,
real.
Okay,
yeah.
They're not going to do that. You know that.
Well, okay, but that's what would have to happen. They would have to say, okay, that's it.
Yeah, we're done.
We're not spending.
Do this anymore. No, we're done.
Here's the other figure from the Trump campaign. You remember this?
That's right.
70 cents, 77 cents of every tax dollar collected is necessary to service the existing debt.
77.
77. So if they said, okay, we're going to take the other 23 cents and we're going to apply it towards paying off the debt, nothing else.
Yeah, we're going to get out of this rut. Yeah, you know, we're just going to get out.
Well, that would mean you close down the government, you close down the military, everything. You have to close everything.
Yeah,
right? Because 77 cents goes to debt service, 23 cents goes to reducing the debt. How much is left for anything? There's not even enough. Well, I do like that. There's not enough money to pay the congressman. That'd be good. But at the end of the day, you realize how realistic that might be.
Yeah.
It's much more tempting to those guys to say, hey, Jerome, buy some of these treasury bonds.
Buy some of this stuff, man.
And stop selling yours. Don't sell yours. Buy ours. Create money and buy ours. And what does that have the effect of doing? Increasing the money supply. And the more money there is in circulation, the more money it takes to buy a $20 gold piece. That's my thesis in a nutshell. From the first time I picked one up and they were $150, that was a time when a week's wage was $125. And here we are today, and a $20 gold piece, I mean, even in its worst condition, it's going to be worth $1,300 or $1,400. So that is the equivalent of a real week's wage, just as 125 was then. If 896 is the wage today, then you can see how the $20 gold piece has outpaced that just the way it's supposed to when you save your money. No. That's the beauty of the system. That's what encouraged savings. Because if you saved your money year over year, it had more purchasing power. It bought more. And this is why our parents and grandparents taught us, live debt-free, pay your debts off quickly and early, and save your money. If you do those three things, that's all you need to do. You don't need to invest or do anything at all. Just those three things, and you'll be fine.
So,
can't do that anymore, Patrick. If you saved the whole $125 in 1971, you didn't eat and just saved your money.
So are you talking about two scenarios, 5, 10, 15 years from now, 20, whatever, that it's just going to be more inflation?
Yes.
Or we don't necessarily have to go through some kind of a 1929 thing, and people wake up and say, what the heck is going on? What happened
will
the last 50
that's
years?
That's the question,
you know?
Really.
Yeah,
will,
I mean,
it take
will it
that
take
that sort
take that?
Of an emergency
right.
for them to act?
Yeah.
I don't believe it will. I know Jerome Powell
for who
is
to
a...
Act?
For him, them, to act. Those powers that...
Oh, the
be,
boys.
The people
to
that
keep
dictate
the wheels on,
monetary
right.
policy. The regulators that are absent in the other market.
Right.
These are the folks who decide, okay, what do you think, folks? Should we continue along our path of we're going to liquidate our bond holdings? Should we continue along that path? Because the Treasury's just issued $1 trillion in new bonds, and the marketplace is not absorbing them, and the marketplace is bidding interest rates up. You think we should allow this to continue? And I don't think they'll put us past the pain. They just don't have the discipline. So they will not sell off their treasury bonds or their mortgage-backed securities. In fact, they'll be forced to add more.
So this is going to be bad for the dollar and good for metals. Got to be, right?
Well, bad for the dollar and good for hard assets.
Hard
tangibles
assets.
Of every kind.
Hard assets.
Yeah.
You know. Is that like a Justin Bieber autograph or something like that? No.
Well, it could be.
Could
yeah.
be. I mean, I guess it could
It's a tangible.
It's a tangible.
Yeah,
it is.
You put your hands
Anything
on it.
Anything tangible. Tangible.
Tangibles. That's tangible, where the... Tangible. Where, but, you know, for the Fed to take off the balance sheet at a time when the Fed is borrowing so much money, I mean, I don't think that's going to be prudent, and I don't think they'll do it. And if they will, it'll be in numbers so small as to be insignificant.
So, Andrew Goss, what's the wild card here as far as having a fellow with the disposition, philosophy, personality of a president, Donald Trump? What is that little juggernaut doing to this whole thing, in your opinion, in the next 3, 4, 5 years, as he tries to get reelected?
Well, you know, the stimulus factors and what he wants to do. You think about the $1.5 trillion in infrastructure.
But that's a lot of some of that isn't going to come from private stuff, too. Right?
Doesn't matter.
He's going to deal.
That's $1.5 trillion in activity. $1.5 trillion.
That's a lot of juice.
Payroll,
right?
Concrete, yeah. Whatever. Even the internetification of rural areas.
I beg your pardon?
They bring broadband.
Could you say it on the radio? Oh, I see.
Internetification.
Internetification, yeah.
Because it was electrification of a rural area in the 30s, right, with the WPA projects, such as the Tennessee Valley Authority and so forth. So this type of activity is very stimulative. Yes, private money will fund it and finance it.
But there'll be a lot of jobs and a lot of inflation.
A lot of trucks, a lot of stuff used, you know, a lot of real things produced. And there'll be privately owned assets with that private-public partnership thing, so you know they'll be better managed financially than the government.
And they're going to 5G the world, right, the gov?
That's what they said.
Yeah, they're gonna
that's
5G
part of their
the
infrastructure improvement. So that's $1.5 trillion. According to the president's numbers, right?
Which will come out to 2 by the time they're done.
Really? You think they'll come in that tight? Well,
I was just being silly.
Yeah, no, you're actually being very generous there.
Yeah, yeah. Because they never come in even close.
Never did.
Never come close, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Trump famously rebuilt Woolman Rink within, I think, 18 months. I'd have to look back, but the city had been working on it for years.
They couldn't figure it out, right?
Gave up.
And you just threw money at it.
Yeah, man, we don't know what happened. It doesn't work. So he went in there and, like, you know, prided himself on that for nothing. He's like, I'll fix it for you. Don't worry about it.
Well, it doesn't look like they're going to kick him out of office. You know they're going to continue.
Yeah, it does.
Really?
Oh, God.
Really?
Oh, man, they want him so bad.
I know that, but, I mean, what are they going to get him on? There's nothing he's gotten, right? I mean, this obstruction of justice, that's not going to go anywhere, is it?
What's justice? Then?
I guess it all depends who justice is. I'd be firing those dudes if I was them. I'd just fire them. What are they going to do?
You can't. Politically, you can't.
Well, Richard Nixon fired,
Yeah,
name,
the
right?
Saturday night massacre. Right,
He just fired him. He said, this fired
Yeah,
this
you know, Andrew Jackson had the same thing.
Did he? He had the same problem.
Yeah, he had to fire like 3-4 treasuries. Secretaries, because they wouldn't do what he told them to do. He's like, move the money out of that bank. No, I'm not doing it. You're fired. Move the money out of that bank. No, I'm not doing it. You're fired. And he kept firing people until the fourth guy, I think it was Roger Taney, said, okay, I'll pull the money out of the Second Bank of the United States. And he did. And they collapsed like a cheap suit, like a house of cards. So the parallel can't be applied here because the political pressure... It's all going to be about what does he have to hide. And you know what I remember here?